I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. Okay, we're in an art gallery. We are wearing our trademark black. The walls are white, and the art is... well, it is what it is. You see what you see. This, after all, is meant to be an intellectual bit of stretching. Contemporary art is not about how we feel. It is about how we think and reason. The new man in charge of Boston's Institute of Contemporary Art would have us take a second look. Nicholas Baum says emotion was once an essential part of art, and that it is, once again, a subject matter for contemporary artists. And it's one thing for us to have an emotional response to a piece of art, he says. It's something else when the artists themselves are focusing on emotions, from joy to pain to fear or affection. And so where is emotion in contemporary art? Is the art that you see making a shift from dispassionate to passionate? Is emotion coming back to the galleries? Or would you say that it never left? Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Now, later this month, Boston's Institute of Contemporary Art opens an exhibit of paintings and photographs and video art called Getting Emotional. You can see some images of the exhibit by going to our website. We are at theconnection.org. The chief curator of the ICA is Nicholas Baum, and he's here with me in the studio. Thank you so much for coming in.
Great to be here.
Now, I would imagine someone who's a curator of contemporary art is taught in a way that you're supposed to set aside emotion and take a more cool, dispassionate look at what's hanging on the wall. Is that part of your training or not?
Absolutely, and I think that's very true in many fields, whether they're social sciences, culturally oriented fields. We've always been trained to sort of be rigorous, to be looking at analysis. And in doing so, where does emotion fit in? It's very hard to talk about emotion in terms of rigor and analysis. But yet we're talking about works of art. We're talking about things that are fundamentally about emotional connections. So I think there is a mind shift going on that the kind of conventional ways of thinking and talking about art and culture need to address emotion and figure out how do we actually understand this incredibly fundamental thing.
So have we been taught then, Nicholas, to remove our own emotion or separate the art from the artist's emotion or not look at the emotion in the subject piece? Or did art itself also take a sort of substantial step away from emotion?
Absolutely. No, that's very true. I think American art of the post-war period, when you think of pop art, minimal art, conceptual art, really the great movements that in a sense sort of shaped the recent history of art globally in many ways, were all movements that were very suspicious of the representation of emotion.
Was that a reaction to something, in your view?
Yeah, I mean, I think in some ways it was a reaction, say, to the era of abstract expressionism, where the gestural, painterly canvases that were sort of very expressive and
physical,
very physical, and which sort of had an aspiration to a kind of universality, to a sort of transcendental state of feeling. And once it got to, like, the second and third generation of that, it started to look pretty clichéd and tired, and people were like, well, wait a minute, is this really emotion or is this just someone, like, sort of slushing paint around?
Yeah, yeah.
And at the same time, I think artists were interested, as they always are, in authentically representing their period and their time. And just think of all the changes that were taking place in the world in that post-war period and the mass media and the way that sort of has developed and influenced our lives. And, you know, and you have great innovators like Andy Warhol come onto the scene who start to say, well, I'm not going to sort of make paintings sitting alone in my studio when I get inspiration. I'm going to have a factory and I'm going to be turning out these machine-made products with my photographic silk screens and my movies that I'm going to make and my film stills and, you know, all of the techniques of sort of mass reproduction and of consumer culture that really talked about the experience of being alive in the 60s and, you know, more recently as well. So I think for a lot of artists, depersonalizing their art, figuring out how to make art and remove their own subjective expression at the same time, became actually a very powerful way of sort of talking about contemporary life.
I want to just pause for half a second here and make sure that we're talking about exactly the same thing, because sometimes I will look at a piece of art and I will have an emotional response to it. I might really like it. I might really hate it. It might, you know, make me feel something. And I you're talking about something a little bit different here. You're talking about what the artist is using, what, as his or her subject matter?
Yes, exactly. The methods that the artist uses,
right.
The subject matter that they literally take on.
Because one of the pieces in Becoming Emotional is Getting Emotional, excuse me, is in fact a Warhol, is The Nine Jackies.
Absolutely. And I wanted to sort of start with Warhol. That's one of his great classic images from the 60s. You see nine images of Jackie. She's smiling.
These are all from the day of the assassination, or that period of
that
time.
That period, anyway, exactly. Yeah. In one group, she's sort of smiling, if you think of, you know, the motorcade sort of greeting people. In another image, she's looking incredibly wistful. And in another image, she's really in mourning. And, you know, you see an image from the public funeral.
All done in blues, too, isn't it?
Right. Blues, of course, a color that immediately evokes sort of melancholy. And the reason I wanted to include an image like that, so iconic, so famous, and also so representative of Warhol in the 60s, was because that kind of work has often been interpreted as being about the end of emotion, about being the inability to have a real one-to-one connection, because all of these images Warhol was using were, of course, from the newspaper. They were mass-produced images. They were black and white. They were repeated. They were in a grid. They were sort of put through this whole process of depersonalization, in a sense. And so often people were talking about, well, Warhol is all about the end of that. And if you think of his own image being so, you know, blank and deadpan and no affect, no expression. And he often said, you know, there is nothing beyond the surface. It's all about the surface and there's nothing below. But I think now, 40 years later, we look at these works and we think, this is incredibly powerful. And it's powerful, yes, because it does talk about the shifts in society and culture. But it's also powerful because it is emotional.
Do we see it with different eyes today, or are we just coming, are we reassessing what was being done at that time?
Well, I think as we get further away in history from any period, of course, we do start to look at it differently. And maybe the things that seemed important about it at the moment of its making become less important and other things become more important. And I think that's actually the test of a great work of art, that we can continue to find things that are, you know, profound and stimulating, even when its specific local reference is no longer that important.
So when you're talking with artists working today, are you hearing from them any talk of making more space for including emotional subjects in the pieces that they do? Or is this an idea that you've had to kind of survey what's out there and maybe take a look at it from a slightly different angle?
Well, that's a great question. No, this idea very much came out of working with contemporary artists, talking to them, looking at what they're actually doing. And many artists, in very different ways, it seemed to me, were trying to find a new language that would enable them to be as innovative, as progressive as, you know, any of the great artists of the 60s, but at the same time break outside of the internal language of art, which I think for many people started to become very hermetic, that if you didn't understand the whole history of art, could you get, you know, this conceptual work?
Part of it's bringing figures back into art too, though. It seems to me when I look at the catalog of
yep.
what you've pulled together,
yep.
there's a lot more, either in video or in oil or in photographs. It's yep. going back to humans.
Very much, absolutely. It's people interacting. It's how people express themselves. It's not necessarily that these artists are just sort of returning to maybe an idea of a kind of very superficial kind of expressionism themselves, or an autobiographical outpouring, you know, art as self-therapy. Mm-hmm. It's more sophisticated than that. I think it's really a fascination with both how to connect with audiences in a very immediate way, but also this whole fascinating subject of emotion, which we're only really just beginning to understand, how people's interactions unfold, how people's relationship to the group, to their family, to society, to the world, how those are emotionally tuned.
And as you point out in your essay with the catalog, not necessarily in a kind of Deepak Chopra way, but more in a way that, you know, different disciplines of science and the humanities are kind of scratching their head and going, right, we need to make room for where this fits in our study of whatever we're looking at. And you're, mm-hmm. I think, more asking the question, is that now happening in contemporary art?
Yes, absolutely. So there's two sides to it. There's what artists are doing, which I think very clearly does show a great interest in emotion, very broadly speaking, as a subject. And the sort of question of how do we start to interpret this? How do we, as an audience going to an art gallery, how does the perspective of emotion start to change the way we actually can interpret and understand their work?
Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. Connection listeners, we're talking about a show that's being put together at Boston's Institute for Contemporary Arts called Getting Emotional, and looking at, in fact, whether or not artists are changing the subjects that they're looking at and what the effect of that is on us as people who look at the art. 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection. Nicholas Baum is here with me. He's chief curator of the Institute of Contemporary Art in Boston, the man in charge of a forthcoming exhibit, Getting Emotional, given us an opportunity to talk about the content or the way that we look at art, the way that artists look at their subject. Are we seeing a shift a little bit away from minimalism to a place that allows not only the viewer of the art, but the artist himself to say, right, let's spend a little time looking at issues that we've been steering away from over the past few decades. Our number is 1-800-423-TALK. We're going to take a call from Williamsville, New York. Elin is with us. Hi, Elin.
Hi.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks for taking my call. I'm a musician, and as soon as I noticed your music that you were playing is very avant-garde, and it just brings to mind, for instance, when I was studying music from the Renaissance, there were times that the intellectual process was the first thing to take place in composing a piece of music. There were commissions, for example, I think it was St. Peter's Dome, when they commissioned St. Peter's Dome.
Mm-hmm.
They asked, I can't remember if it's Akagem or who it was who wrote, but they asked him to write a piece, and he did, and the piece mathematically corresponded to the architectural structure of the dome. But if you just sit and listen to the music, I mean, that's way back, and still we have this emotional response. And it may have been a little intellectual exercise for him and kind of an inside joke about the piece he was writing, or an inside intellectual satisfaction that he was doing it this way. But then when we bring it up to the 20th century, we have, for instance, when we're sitting and watching movies and we listen to contemporary music in the background, talking about revving up your emotions.
Are you saying, then, that you can't really ever separate emotion from music, emotion from art, that even though there's an attempt to intellectualize or even over-intellectualize, the emotion is always there simply because of the...
There's going to be a reaction. No matter what you put in front of the audience, there's going to be a reaction. I mean, I've sang in concerts at the Buffalo Phil when we were doing contemporary music, where you take a sheet of music and part of the score was to drop the piece of music once you were finished singing it. And people got up out of their seats and left, even though they paid good money for a ticket. So there was an emotional reaction.
Which doesn't necessarily have to be...
Yeah, no, I mean, I think you're caller is absolutely spot on. I mean, we're not sort of saying that emotion can only be a response to art that takes emotion as its subject. And I think we do have very emotional responses to great abstract works of art. And I mean, great music, of course, would be the kind of example par excellence. In a sense, I think we're talking here about sort of emotion coming out of the closet and actually being something that we see addressed in a direct way. And also the way that we're sort of upturning the classical division between emotion and reason. It's not that like some art is all about reason and some is all about emotion. I think we're starting to understand that.
Though there were people who wanted to make that separation in the Age of Enlightenment, right?
That's very right, exactly. And our culture has really been based in very large degree on that separation. But I think what we're also recognizing is that those things are really interconnected, that they're part of one organic whole, whether we'd think of it in terms of the brain and the new research about neurology that shows us that reason and emotion are actually organically interconnected and that you can't really have reason without emotion. So the very basis of that split is sort of brought into question. And, you know, through this process of doing an exhibition that focuses on emotion where it is a particular subject, it kind of throws emotion into the spotlight and enables us to think about how our emotional responses to art and artists' subject of emotion sort of relate.
One of the pieces that is in the exhibit, soon to open, is called What Remains. It was done last year by Christian Jankowski. He's a contemporary artist based in Manhattan. And what this is, it's a film that he made, a film collection of people's reactions after having seen their own Hollywood film. And part of what you see when you watch this is that you don't know what film they're responding to. You just know that they're responding.
This is just making me so happy. It's, I can't believe it's so funny.
It makes me nostalgic, makes me sad, and it confuses me.
I'm in the audience. I feel passion. I feel patriotism.
It gives me the sense of values of how much I mean in a life I have here in America in comparison with the lives over there. And somehow I still appreciate my being here.
You might be leaving something wonderful just for a belief that something's great, but there's no heaven on earth, as they say. So there can be a lot of disappointment there.
Little pieces of the audio from a 16mm film made by Christian Jankowski, which is part of the new exhibit, Getting Emotional. Christian's joining us now on the line from Stuttgart, Germany, where he's taking a few moments away from a class that he's teaching. Christian, thanks for being with us.
Hello, everybody.
Hi, Christian.
Hello. Hey, Niklas.
I'm wondering, Christian, in your own work, were you doing specifically what we have been talking about on the program here, thinking to yourself, right, how do I look at emotion, people's emotion?
I think that many times I would somehow use those emotions that are provoked and that are somehow around and somehow try to get these emotions and transform them into a part of the work. I think it's more, it's much about using this energy from emotion to try to bring it to the medium of art and to now this times this like this different Hollywood movies or this movies that got done onto my 16mm movie by just seeing what people how they are touched by these things they see, what they really take away from it. So also what they make out of what they see.
And what happens when you take a whole series of emotions, as you have done, and put them all together, where all we really have is reaction, emotion? We don't have the context in that. What happens then?
That's a question to the audience.
I'll let Nicholas jump in here.
well, I mean, of course, immediately we can identify with people. We all go to see movies. We all have our responses.
And these are all very ordinary-looking people that we see in Christian's film.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's also the simple kind of humanity of people expressing themselves, which is somehow, although it's incredibly everyday, it's also compelling. I mean, it's just fascinating to see people express themselves, articulate their feelings, be invited to do that.
Yeah, I mean, I also think that, I mean, the part of it, it's weird that I think it's like, such a major thing in all of this part in dealing with art. If you really think about what counts, sometimes I would doubt, like, big and great artworks. I mean, it might be as touching and also as meaningful to somebody if you even would maybe, if somebody sees a piece of art or a movie you would not consider as like such a great thing, but if the thought is beautiful or if there's a sincere statement that comes through to telling something to the audience, then I think it's very beautiful. I think so. I think that this was maybe also one thing I was interested in, getting all of these people in front of the camera, to somehow show this human part in people, but also have them stimulate the fantasy of the next viewer who are now watching those expressions and that emotions of the people, but then make up their own films because they never are exactly sure about which film they are talking about. But you kind of make your own movie. You make your own idea about one movie that is stimulated by, I would say, 25, 24 different other big production movies through the transmission of these people who are talking for them.
Christian, I want to thank you and your students for allowing you to leave the class for a couple of moments to join us.
Christian, come back to the States soon.
I'll be there soon.
That's Christian Jankowski joining us there on the line from Stuttgart, Germany. His piece, What Remains, is included in this new exhibit, Getting Emotional, at the Boston Institute for Contemporary Art. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. Maggie's joining us from Charlestown, South Carolina. Hi, Maggie.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. I'm enjoying your program, especially because I've lived through German Expressionism and Abstract Expressionism and the New York School, and then pop art and minimalism and so forth and so on.
You make it sound like you had to endure this, Maggie.
Oh, no, I'm a painter, and and it's very important in my own curiosity.
Yeah.
But I kind of feel like the period of the 60s and 70s, and even the kind of, I almost feel, fake German Expressionism that happened, were all kind of anti-art. They were showbiz music. Some of it was based on our technology running very fast.
Does anti-art, Maggie, mean that it was deliberately removed from emotional context?
Well, I remember when I was at Pratt, people were talking about easel painting being dead, and that there were all these new things happening. And if you look at a Lichtenstein or you look at some of those people, it was like gimmicks, just like pop psychology. And it wasn't the core of what real art is all about, whatever the medium, whether it's dance or music or writing or whatever, which is, in fact, in my mind, a transformation of the material or the medium and the visual experience and the artist, where they connect at a very, very deep level, and what comes out is a big surprise. It's not planned. It's not. It happens, and it doesn't start with a weak foundation either. It has to have a good academic foundation, where you have a kind of like in your own personal computer the skills to make that leap, that transformation, and that's the kind of art that you see in museums that goes on forever. When you look at a Modigliani or a Cezanne
right.
or a Rembrandt, you lose your breath.
Let me, if I can, just stop you for half a second there, Maggie, to remind our listeners that this is The Connection. I'm Dick Gordon. And also to bring Nicholas back in, just on that the last point that Maggie was making about having the academic training but being a little bit more, I don't know if it's intuitive or organic or just not being as controlled, maybe. Is that something that's a part of where you're going with this?
I think so. You know, artists like Christian, his generation, who in a sense were probably schooled in with the heritage of the post-war period, of the great sort of innovations of minimalism and conceptualism, which really dominated their thinking. And I think for many of them, as they started to really develop their own practice, there was that problem of, well, where do I take this that's a new place, that is going to surprise people and that's going to create art which itself is surprising, as Maggie said. And you start to think, well, you have to start to figure out new ways of making art, new approaches to it, allowing new subject matter into it, and perhaps even allowing things that you have censored because for some reason they've been considered inappropriate. And I think emotion is the key example.
And you said a little bit earlier in the program that it is that you want to make a distinction between what we're talking about and kind of art as therapy, and yet the art ends up being a lot more personal. It seems to be a lot more personal in terms of people. We see self-portraits in this show, and I'm just trying to think.
Yeah,
people.
I mean, there's a great example of that. Would be there's a video installation by Darren Almond, who is a terrific young British artist whose background is very much in conceptual art, using text, using numbers, language. And he made this video installation in which there are three screens, and on one screen is his father, another screen is his mother, and a third screen is an earth digging, is a piece of heavy earth-moving equipment,
right.
sort of gouging at the earth. And it's his father relating all of the injuries that have happened to him over the course of his life.
He was in
working,
construction, was he not?
Right, exactly, yeah. As a construction laborer. So you see him kind of relating this in a very matter-of-fact sort of way. I mean, he's a very gruff, you know, kind of British guy, not giving away too much emotion. And then on the other screen, you see his wife, the artist's mother, and she's smiling affectionately, she's crying, she's pained as you move through this narrative. And it's just the most wonderful kind of illustration of a relationship, of the emotional bond, of the emotional responses. Yet, you know, it's a beautifully conceived, conceptually rigorous piece by an artist whose whole background, you know, comes from there. And so I think you see, in that case, someone kind of breaking through, finding that they really wanted to deal with something that was personal, and finding an artistic language to do that.
But saying that it's not a therapeutic exercise in as much as it's an artistic exercise. What happens when I create this juxtaposition, not as much for me, maybe partly, but also for other viewers as well, right?
Well, I guess it can be both.
Yeah.
I mean, many kinds of artistic practice do have a sense of obsession, of the need to express and create. And, I mean, that's a wonderful thing. And so I'm not arguing against that by any means. But, of course, for it to be significant to an audience, you know, it has to move beyond the kind of pure personal outpouring, perhaps.
All right, 1-800-423-8255 is the number to join our conversation this hour. Nicholas Bohm is here with me. We're talking about Getting Emotional. It is a new exhibit of contemporary art that takes a second look at where emotion fits as a subject for different art pieces, and we are talking about film, we're talking about sculpture and video and painting and photographs all at the same time. We'd like to hear from you. Is there a little bit of emotion coming back to art today, either in what you see or in what you see being produced? 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection. And if you've been to our website as a way of getting to our photo gallery of pieces from the Getting Emotional exhibit, you will have seen at the cover there a picture of a young woman sort of shouting or howling or screaming from her hands and knees, looking straight into the camera. It's from a video by the artist Chloe Pina. It's called Black Mouth. Chloe is an artist who works often with video and distorting the kinds of sounds and the speed and the images that that she'll use.
Misery and pain. 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 Misery and pain! Misery and pain! I'm out of my mind!
Okay, it's not actually what's happening in your office on a Wednesday morning. Well, it might be. and that's from another piece. It's just one that happened to catch the ear of our audio engineer, as something that expresses a little bit of, more than a little bit of emotion.
Well, I think you hear right away this visceral kind of intensity. You know, here's an artist who really wants to use sound and image
right.
in a way that, like, just grabs you, and, you know, you just sort of feel it in a very intense and direct way. And there's a whole section in the exhibition devoted to this idea of bodily sensation, where language and sound is not so much about what we're communicating, but just this sort of visceral experience of intensity.
1-800-423-8255 to join us. Let's go to Aiken, South Carolina, and Anne's on the line. Did you like that misery and pain, Anne?
Well, it definitely made me laugh.
Got your attention. That was
when you made the comment about the office. I know when I used to work in an office, there were many times that we all felt that way.
Life in the cubicles. But you're in an art studio, am I right?
Yes, I am in my own sculpture studio right now, and listening to the show, always enjoy it. And I guess you all have made so many good points, but the first thing that caught me was that over the past few decades, it does seem like the lack of emotion in art has kind of alienated a whole lot of the general public, and people have had a much harder time relating to art. It's become more of a snob appeal.
Well, there was a clubbishness too,
yeah,
wasn't
exactly.
it? You needed to know the language, or you needed to have a pass.
Exactly, and you don't get it. You have to, and the thing that I found was that when I looked at a lot of art, I would look at it and it didn't appeal to me at all in any way, not visually, not emotionally. And once I learned about the piece or where the artist was coming from, then maybe it made sense to me. But that feels to me like you're missing something as an artist, that a piece of work should have some kind of initial appeal or reaction from the viewer.
I think that's part of what Nicholas is saying here, that they're not separate, but in a way both have to be there.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think many artists feel this way, that there is this language of art that's developed, and which is actually fantastic and important, and, you know, all of that research and knowledge.
It tends to be inaccessible to some people as well.
Exactly. So how do you sort of work from that foundation in a way that will actually welcome people and engage people and be relevant? And I think, you know, this is a way that we've seen artists start to kind of break out of that more internal language without kind of dismissing it at the same time. Because I think, you know, the two are important, as you know, the earlier caller talking about the musical, the relationship between the structure of the music and its effect. I mean, the two go hand in hand.
It's something that I wanted to hear you go a little bit further on, and that is the idea that you could make art that has an immediate emotional response by, you know, putting in pictures of guns or swastikas
mm-hmm.
or
right.
Twin Towers or what, you know what I
right.
mean? All those kind of hot
sensational
button things.
Right.
Exactly.
Right.
But you're talking, I think, about something that comes with a little bit more intellectual rigor at the same time, rather than just exploiting symbols?
Well, that's very true. And I mean, part of the reason that the exhibition is structured the way it is, I mean, we could have done an exhibition that was really just based on what works of art move me, Nicholas Boehm. And it would be, then the exhibition would really sort of be about me and my taste.
But there's always a little bit of something there.
Well, of course, there certainly is that there. But I thought it was also important to try and really get at this way that artists are starting to explore emotion. And it doesn't have to be at the sort of expressionist end of emotion. You know, some of the artists that we see in the exhibition are looking at the relationship of emotion to society, you know, the broader cultural kind of context of emotion. So the exhibition sort of takes you on a journey from that very visceral bodily experience of emotion through the expression of feelings, through the communication of feelings, intimate relationships, lovers, you know, mother and child, and then right out to sort of society and the way emotion figures in so much of what we see take place kind of in the world and the context in the world for our feelings.
Let's go to Flint, Michigan for a call from Tom. Tom's joining us on the phone. Hi, Tom.
Hi. I'm in my studio here listening to this really interesting program. I'm a painter and a retired professor of art. And just a couple of things. One is I think it's maybe becoming a little bit less unfashionable to actually say the word beauty and beautiful in the context of making your own art, in the context of the response to the art, and that to see something that you perceive as beautiful is an emotion. It's an emotional response. And
Tom, when you were teaching, was it kind of a given that in those art classes there was something about beauty that you wanted to avoid?
Well, there was certainly, you know, kind of indoctrinated in us. I mean, I came up through the late 50s and 60s, you know, that it certainly couldn't verge on anything approaching pretty or beautiful in a sort of conventional way. But, you know, the more art you make, the more art you see, the more you realize exactly what you were saying earlier, that language of art, it's a very special language, a difficult one to learn, but when it works, it can knock you off your chair. And that it always has to be there, I think, in the work that that's going to prevail, at least you know, in the medium term.
Right.
I mean, conceptual art, the great stuff is beautiful. You know, I have the same strong response to a great Oppenheim or a Robert Gober or a Bob Viola that I do to a great painting.
I'm wondering, Nicholas, as you're listening to Tom talking about the place of beauty in art, if this is something that was a motivator for you.
I think it's very true that there's often recently been talk about the return of beauty, and that it's after having been sort of eschewed for a long time, it's now sort of celebrated. And in a sense, I think this whole idea about emotion is a way of rethinking that, or a way of contextualizing that in a way that's also a little more complex. I think the return to beauty argument has often resulted in, you know, what could be seen as a somewhat limited kind of response. Yes, you know, we all love to see things that are beautiful, but if we make beauty itself the kind of end point or the total objective of the work of art, it's probably not going to knock our socks off. It's probably not going to raise to that level of profundity.
In fact, if you try too hard, it won't work.
Well, that's calendar art, isn't it?
Intuitive element there that, you know, you It just, you know, like Picasso said, I don't seek, I find. You know?
Right. Lucky him.
Tom, I thank you for your call, and you can take a look at some of the pieces that are in this exhibit by checking out our website. We're at theconnection.org. There are links there. Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. Next to Cambridge, and Bob's joining us. Hi, Bob.
Hello.
Thanks for calling. Tell me what you're thinking.
I was thinking that a lot of artists in the post-war period, and both post-World War I and World War II, seem to have a motive of maybe dismantling some of the manipulative powers of art. And
give me an example of one of those manipulative powers, if you would.
Well, to wrench your emotions. I mean, any music in film, especially at that time, you know, Wagnerian music, expressionist painting, epic poetry, you know, these things that sort of string you along and tell you how to feel. And I feel like a lot of art, and you can see, not only because of artistic movements that preceded that, but also because of the political situation,
right.
These things would, you know, lead artists to maybe avoid these manipulative.
I mean, there were certainly those splits and divisions that happened in the 60s that were a part of this. But I like the point that Bob's making about not wanting to be led too much.
Yeah. No. I mean, I think that's absolutely right. I think it's a great point. And I think this is one of the challenges. Also, when you think about our popular culture, if you think about Hollywood films, if you think about reality TV...
Cry here.
you know, of course, they're all based on emotional manipulation.
Right.
And they're very much about leading us, you know, in sort of very particular ways, and where we surrender to that willingly. We love it. But it can, of course, be saccharine. It can be obvious. It can be sentimental, and it's not. It doesn't have the kind of traction that great art does. But here's sort of the problem for artists: how do they compete in a world that's dominated by that kind of culture? And if you look at video artists, for example, it's no coincidence that there are several video artists in this show,
right.
Because they're using another language. They're using the language of film, which is so much about the manipulation of emotion. But then they're kind of twisting that and tweaking that and recalibrating that in ways that then become surprising, in ways that sort of make you perhaps aware of your emotional investment or make you aware of the way emotional themes can unfold.
I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection. Bob, I want to come back to you on that. In sort of testing the waters for a return here, is there in your mind a danger of then being completely co-opted by how manipulative emotion can be?
Well, yeah, there's a danger, but I don't see that as a major problem. And I think that a lot of reasons why we're seeing artists return to emotional content, and one is simply because there's been such coldness, and there's always a reaction to your previous movement. But another is that the tools of media like film and news media and all these things that were somewhat inaccessible for so long because of cost are becoming cheaper, and people can sort of use these media now and become part of the regular world and not have to abstract everything to distinguish themselves as artists so much.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's certainly true. Those media are now available in a way that they weren't before.
Thanks for that, Bob. It was good to have you on the program. There's something else that you do with the show that I thought was kind of interesting, and that is, I'm thinking of the piece, you'll have to remind me of the name of the artist who took the photographs of the actors crying.
Right. Sam Taylor Wood.
Because that's not emotion. That's an expression of emotion as portrayed by an actor, right? So you're not saying it's always genuine, it's always, and we need to go back to that. You're still testing what's real, what's not.
Yeah, no, of course, as soon as an artist tries to represent emotion, if it's through photography or film, it immediately brings up the question of, well, is this a performance? Is this real emotion, or is this being kind of portrayed for the camera. And clearly in this case, where the artist has taken a whole series of famous actors, all men, the series is called Crying Men. So in the show we have Michael Gambon and Forrest Whitaker, both bawling their eyes out in wonderful photographs. But, you know, what's fascinating is, in one sense, we of course recognize that these are actors, and emoting is what they do for a living,
right?
On cue. And yet, as an audience, we can know that and still have an emotional response. That's what we do whenever we
it's
go.
It's part of understanding our own emotions, or
right,
the way that
right
we were talking about the
and,
manipulation.
And, you know, to even complicate it further, when you start to think about, well, how does an actor get into the headspace of crying? You know, we think of method acting. If an actor actually starts to cry, has the facial expressions of crying, is thinking sad, well, aren't they sad? Isn't that an emotion? It's like it might be induced, but it's still real.
I love the comment that you use at the close of your essay when you're quoting your artist friend in New York who basically sounds a bit of a warning for you. He says, look around, Nicholas. The reduction of public discourse to emotional appeals is exactly what's wrong with this country. So do you tread carefully here or gingerly in stepping back getting emotional?
Yes. I mean, I think it certainly focused my attention on the fact that the exhibition and my intentions in curating it are certainly not to kind of celebrate emotion and say, okay, everybody, forget reason, forget anything else, let's just get emotional and let it all hang out. No. What I'm saying is, look at emotion and its role in our culture today. And let's understand it, and let's see how artists are responding to that and helping us to see what it means to be alive today.
Thank you so much for coming. It was great hearing you talk about it.
My pleasure.
Nicholas Bohm is curator of the Institute of Contemporary Art in Boston. His exhibit, Getting Emotional, opens later this month. We also talked earlier in the program with Christian Jankowski. He's a contemporary artist based in Manhattan, speaking to us there from Germany. Just a quick reminder, photo gallery of the ICA's forthcoming exhibit on our website. We are at theconnection.org. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.